Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowest price guarantee.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Next Level. I'm JVL here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. Guys, this is it. This is our last pre-election Next Level. And it was my idea that we gate this episode only for subscribers. But then Sarah told me that that would be inhuman and a horrible thing to do to you, the
people. We love you guys too much for that, okay? But you should be a fucking subscriber.
Be a subscriber.
If you're a Next Level listener and you're not a subscriber, come on, guys, come on. Give us a break. Thebulwark.com/subscribe.
Hop on. Now, here's a question I fear. Why not ask this now? Should we be doing just a little for the next few days, like an evening Next Level check-in with the three of us for like 20 minutes every night, like 8:30 p.m. in the
East? I'd certainly do it. I hung out with our subscribers last night and did the pre and what was an impromptu accidental post show after Kamala's speech. And it's great. Hanging out with our subscribers is the best way to get through this moment.
All right. Well, listen, hop into the comments and the chat. And if you want us to do a little sort of nightly Next Level over the next few days, hop in and tell us.
Maybe
hop in and tell
us. Next Level is another option. Timo's got things to do. Maybe a weekend Next Level. We'll do the best we can.
All right. So we have the tale of two rallies. Our two campaigns have given us their closing arguments. We had Tim, you there on the ground in Madison Square, next to Madison, adjacent to Madison Square Garden, for Donald Trump's triumph of the will, in which he, as far as I can tell, made zero outreach. It was basically the national version of Carrie Lake's tell the McCain voters to go fuck themselves. Right. I mean, he was saying basically, you know, if you're not with us, we don't want you. We're just going to turn out all of our incels and we'll swamp you guys. And he got 20,000 middle-aged, middle-class white guys to show up for that. And then Kamala Harris went down to the Ellipse outside of the White House last night and brought out 75,000 people.
Feels like
kind
a lot.
Of amazing. Sarah, talk to
me. The biggest Ellipse speech ever in history.
Bigger than the Ellipse. There was a very large Ellipse speech 4 years ago, roughly. Not quite 4 years ago. But that was still 50% smaller than this.
Thank God.
So, you know, it was this. It wasn't this. It was this.
Got it. Yeah.
You know what was crazy to me is how when she got done with the speech, people dispersed peacefully. They didn't go down to the Capitol and try to ransack it.
They didn't try to take their country back with strength.
No, they didn't smear feces on the wall or put on weird horn helmets
last night.
I don't think a single one. Which, I mean, is it really an Ellipse speech if all the cops are okay and treated nicely?
People seem very happy. I don't know if you saw the YouTube video that Sam and producer Sebastian were out there, and there were Pete Bulwark fans shouting at them, and everybody in the video in the background, everyone seems very jubilant. One thing I noticed that maybe explains a lot of this is it felt like there were a lot of gays there, because during the part of Kamala Harris' speech where she's like, we didn't live through Selma, and we didn't live through the Battle of Gettysburg, and she's like listing all these historical things that we didn't live through to hand over to a petty tyrant, and then she goes, we didn't live through Stonewall, and the crowd's like, yeah! Stonewall! And I was like, a lot of gays out there. Like, a lot of the loudest people in that crowd were either gay or allies, which we appreciate all of our allies. But Stonewall, big cheer for Stonewall.
I also noticed the big cheer for Stonewall because I was like, how many normies sitting at home? They're all like, Stone, what? What happened at Stonewall? Is that a famous general from the Civil War?
Stonewall Jackson.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, I could be wrong, but I think Stonewall is kind of just part of the American
lexicon.
It's
mainstream now, yeah.
I think it's totally mainstream. You know, like 20 years ago, 25 years ago, you had to really be into gay rights to know what Stonewall was. But I think it's now just part of the furniture.
Yeah, we've totally, the gay agenda has achieved flying colors.
Sorry. Is that good? Does that make you happy or sad? Like, it's like your favorite band
breaking
big.
It makes
me
happy. There's some gays who like to do the, oh, I was here first, and I want pride to be, you know, a counterculture again, and I want to be able to whatever, like, have pups running around and, you know, all kind of, and jock straps. And I'm like, I love gay. I love Target pride. It's great. Let us take over full dominance, you know? Nothing like, what was the Raytheon pride float? Nothing makes me feel happier as an American than the Raytheon pride float.
Like, I haven't been to a pride parade in a long time, but it's pretty much just like banks and...
the military-industrial complex.
Defense contractors. They're handing out little bombs that say with rainbows on them. It's great.
You can tell we're all just super anxious about the actual election results and this seminal podcast, the final podcast for the election, that we're just kind of, going to
see, we should have made people pay for this content. It's what should have happened.
All right. So what are you talking about last night, Sarah? Because I got to tell you, I am feeling kind of hopeful today.
Yeah. I mean, look, I did I did the live stream last night, and so I watched it with our people. And I was sitting there, doing this. I would say if I had to, I've been thinking about the speech. That's me pumping my arms like... I was pumped.
Raise the roof.
Yeah. And, sometimes when I get excited, you've seen me. I gesticulate. I can't, sit still. And
yeah,
I was
like Alex Jones.
She was moving me in that way where I was like, yes, yes, he's got an enemies list and you've got a to-do list. Give me that. I will say
I'm sorry. Yeah? I have an enemies list, too.
I know you do. I know. And anybody who isn't us is an enemy. And I respect the straightforwardness of your priorities. But I would say it was like a little bit like a smile in its, if you're thinking about it, like a line where, there were these extremely high points at the beginning where she drew the why are we here? Why is this relevant? Why is this, what's the symbolism of this night? There was an annoying siren going off while that was happening for part of it. I think some of them was trying to disrupt, it. And, I'll just say that watching her just like mow through it and not even I like loved that, like something about it made me be like, yeah, you're not getting distracted, you are gonna hit this mark. And she did. Then she like, to me, they had clearly been like, look, it's our last chance, we're gonna do it all in this speech, right? So we're gonna make sure that people know child tax credit, and we're gonna build housing, and we're gonna cap insulin prices, although I kind of thought they already did that, but maybe I don't have my policy as correct. But here was the thing about the cheering that I loved. Speaking of Stonewall, but also I think it's amazing when you get 75,000 presumably libs on the ellipse and she's like, we're going to have the most lethal fighting force. And people are like, yeah. And she's like, and we're going to secure the border. And people are like, yeah. And I was just like, this is, and she's, we are going to be leaders in the world and we're not going to let these guys push us around. And I was like, man, the world's really changed.
Did the neocons just take over the Democratic Party?
Don't say that.
Yeah, don't say it. She is, look, man, she's leaning into, I'm going mainstream. And, whenever she does, there's a couple, price gouging or whatever. I'm like, boo. But like, I also just, whatever. The overall speech I thought was, there was a bunch of new stuff in there. There was some stump stuff in there, but I thought it was an excellent closing argument, and I thought the visuals were magnificent. She looked great. Like, she looked ready to do it. She looked like she meant it. I was like, it was like the DNC speech where I felt like, okay, you're getting me. I'm in. I'm roped in. What'd you guys think?
Visuals was great. Strategy was great. To do it, to get attention, to steal the attention back from Trump. Any of the whatever navel gazy stuff about should she talk more about it, like all that was stupid. Obviously she was capable of discussing Donald Trump, the threat from looming fascism, and discussing issues that are important to people, that resonate with people. That this is not an either or equation. I agree with Sarah about the smile of the speech. Thought that the first 3 minutes were like really great. Last minute or two was really great. The rest of it was a little, I'm a little bit nervous. I guess I'll say one of the things that has me a little nervous is that I think that the Democrats, the Harris camp, and I think part of the reason is you had to do this because of the nature of such a short campaign, and I'd rather this than the alternative, but they might be a little bit prisoner of the message testing complex.
Yeah.
And the message testing industrial complex to me. I just think that the ads and her speeches at times, it's just like, I can tell you exactly, I've read that line in the blueprint message testing memo or one of the other fucking groups, the message testing memos that I've read. And, you know, you lose a little bit of the magic, you know, you lose a little bit of the, you know, the things that Obama could hit at times, you know, the levels that he could hit at times, you know, where you're really kind of stirring the soul. I think that there was a lot of times where souls weren't stirred. But, like, she wasn't out there to stir my soul, really, right? Like, she's out there doing a job. This was a tactic. It was to get attention back. It's to have good visuals. It's to have a video they could use for the final weekend of ads. It's to draw a contrast with Donald Trump on his worst day. She did all of that.
And she looked stronger.
She did.
I think, right? I mean, standing in front of the White House with 75,000 people and hitting, I mean, you know, the entire speech was the length of a single Trump digression, right? I mean, you Trump's windmill, you know, shtick when he goes off script, that was basically the length of this speech. It was like 28 minutes, I think, 29 minutes.
Yeah, she moved
because you can
quickly,
do all of that,
good.
Right? This is, you don't need more than that. And
no, I could have cut it down even more. I could have got 22 minutes out of that bad boy, I think, and been happy.
But she, you know, she looked, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe visuals, maybe people really are discerning and they aren't strictly ruled by visuals. But in the Trump lizard brain, which is like everything is central casting, last night was like one of those 90s movies in which Morgan Freeman is the president. You know, like he just looks and sounds like the president. Everybody can buy it because, like, she just looked and sounded like a president, right? Standing there in front of that many people wearing that black ensemble with like the white kerchief. Like everything just felt central casting for what president is. And I think, and this is what I'm writing in my newsletter today, I think that Trump probably shat himself last night looking at that. Because that's a language that he understands.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Trump shat himself, but then he changed his underwear and Joe Biden went and shat himself. So I just, you know, I got to tell you.
Talk to me about our greatest living president.
I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because I will then be doing the thing that I don't want people to do, which is let Joe Biden's gaffe, whatever you want to call it, overshadow what was a very strong closing argument. But I can't not comment on the fact that Joe Biden should go away for a second. Like, go do whatever you need to do to president, please. But why are you sitting on like a Zoom as the president of the United States, just like opining on whatever? Stop it. What are you thinking? And I don't care. Watching last night as her speech got overshadowed by a bunch of people parsing an apostrophe on whether he misspoke or whether he meant it. I wanted to do, well, I can't, I was very angry.
You had rage.
I had the white rage, the white hot rage that brings my whole body
you should
to
get
its
a,
knees.
You should get a punching bag in the house, like in the basement, to just kind of let it out, or like one of those big bags.
Counterpoint. The Biden
There's no
thing
counterpoint.
Allowed there to be an extra layer of drama, another hook for people to talk about, and for her to unequivocally distance herself from Biden, which
yeah,
she
I love this 9D chess take. I really do. Yes, Joe Biden did this last
I'm
night.
I'm not saying
so today,
he planned it. I'm
so
not
today,
saying he planned it, but I'm just saying
can,
like when you look back at it,
herself
like,
from
I don't
him.
Know.
I do think, look, I first of all, she should throw him under the bus. You want to know what I think her closing argument should be? Should be like, that old guy, I took over. No, I know, Sam. Whatever. This will close me. This will close me as I want to see her be like, and she did. She was out there this morning saying, I don't think we should ever call anybody in this country garbage, no
yeah,
matter
strong
who they're
voting for. From me on that. Yeah.
I know
I mean,
that.
I have to say,
not surprised
you're
on the bad side
of this one. God forbid you run for any office.
The first time that Kamala Harris has really lost me during this campaign. Like, I can abide the price controls. Like, you know, I disagree and so on. Yeah. But where I hop off the bus is that we can't call people in this country garbage. Because you know what?
Is this America or what?
I mean, we've seen the people. I watched the video from Madison Square Garden. I'm sorry. Some people are garbage.
Yeah. I will. I did a full monologue on this at the end of the Bulwark podcast today, so I could get off my chest what Sarah just did. So people can go over there if they want my extended remarks, which include I'm so sick of fucking flopping social media, like people pretending to be offended by things. Like that's another thing I'm just so sick of. And everybody does this, by the way. Libs do this too, but conservatives are the worst. Like their entire like the Daily Wire's whole existence is like faking, pretending to be outraged about something they're not outraged about. So, and just as a rule of thumb, if you see a person talking and they say something and you get super happy that you're going to be able to use that thing against them, then you're not actually offended. Actually, you weren't actually offended. You're happy. You're overjoyed. You cannot be overjoyed and offended simultaneously. So talk about that a little bit. And I also talk about Biden's fifis, which I just... I cannot do another second of anybody on background to Politico or the New York Times talking about how Joe Biden's like whatever feelings or legacy are hurt by whatever she's doing. And it's like the whole thing is insane, and we all need to be grown-ups, and whatever it takes for Kamala Harris to win, we all should do, including him, with nobody's feelings attached to it at all, and especially not the feelings of the president of the United States, who is going to have a wonderful legacy and statue and you know birthday honoring. Like we don't need to okay, like we don't need to get all like ooh I don't know we got to walk on eggshells around. So no, winning is the objective here.
Yeah, especially sorry JVL, you got to hear a little bit more of this because I will say, watching him do that thing last night, I was reanimated. In my rage for the people who also were like, obviously he can be president for another 4 years. Obviously we should. I swear to God, even if she loses, if one person says to me, if it had been Joe Biden, I will lose my ever loving mind. Like,
stay off Threads.
We'll have more.
Make
acute...
sure you don't come to Threads.
Yeah, don't go to Threads. We'll have more acute concerns at that time. So yeah, than that,
will.
Actually, so good. It's I've got true. Good news for you. You'll have other things to be mad about. But yeah.
So two quick just coda points on this.
Four
one
more
is
points. And one more and one
sorry,
more.
Sorry, and another thing. JD it's Vance like, on the flopping is the worst of the floppers because this guy managed to do on the Puerto Rico thing the other night or on the Trump rally goes, oh, I didn't hear the joke. And also, we need to be stopped being so offended at everything. He did that just after being so offended by Gretchen Whitmer. I don't know, feeding a Dorito. I like didn't quite understand what the thing Gretchen Whitmer did.
The Catholics were flopping on that one. That was a mocking of the Holy Eucharist.
Okay. Well, all right. So JD Vance freaked out about that. Then he said we all needed to just calm down and not get so offended about jokes. And then last night he talked about how this was the most offensive thing that he could possibly imagine. And I was like, you, JD Vance, are the worst flopper of all floppers, including you're a flip-flopper. On Trump. And just, boy, do I loathe you with every fiber of my being. Also, but I do have great news. I've got really good,
awesome
news as a result of this, which is, did Joe Biden, regardless of the apostrophe gate, did he say something deeply offensive? Is he too old to be president? You know what? Great news.
Concur.
This guy is not running again. You do not have to vote for him. He is gone. There is a totally normal lady over there who looks just like a great American president who's talking about being the president for all people, who's talking about listening to voices from others, who,
loves,
you know,
the country, loves freedom,
loves the country,
wants to use lethal fighting force.
Yeah. And she is an option. She is an option. These two soup for brain octogenarians, you don't have to vote for either one of them. You can vote for her, and you should.
I mean, that all sounds good, but is she black?
Even better.
Because that's going to be a problem for some people.
Yeah.
Can I just say, again, I don't want to take a position on the Joe Biden statement and the parsing of it, but I would like to go back and defend the honor of Hillary Rodham Clinton, who... Whatever
nailed
the political
it with the basket
merits,
of deplorables. Nailed
her
it.
Basket of deplorables.
She is totally correct.
She
about
was
that.
Early on this in a way that many other people now recognize. Because again, she didn't say like everyone. She was like, you can separate the Republican Party voters into like three different. There's like, you know, the normie types who are about a third, and then the other types. I forget who it was. Are about a third. Then there's this third basket where just totally deplorable. You know what? I am sorry, but truth is an affirmative defense. And, you know, where's the lie? Where's the lie?
I agree. She was right on Basket of Deplorables. Nailed it.
Guys, that's not the point. The point is when you're running for office, you should not. And frankly, I think if you're an elected politician, I think if you're president of the United States, the current president of the United States, you should be loath to label any American in a broad brush terms as deplorable or garbage or any of that.
Donald Trump does that literally every minute of every day.
I know. And you know what I think about Donald Trump? I think
like
he should
him.
Not be the president of the United States.
No, but we're not. But we're only talking about political expediency. right. I mean, we're only talking about political expediency, not truth.
You're
or
saying
not
it doesn't
truth.
Harm him. Then it's you're talking
it
about the
It doesn't
imbalance.
Harm him because of the nature of his coalition. Because what
I disagree
he
with that.
Uses
it does harm
that,
him.
It does harm him.
I don't. I think that
it doesn't
that's
harm
why
him
has,
enough
he
for our
be
liking.
Able to win.
It doesn't harm him enough for our liking, but it does harm him some.
Not as much as it helps him, right? He uses that to turn out his low turn. You know, Sarah, I'm writing a little bit today, and I went to look up your contention about, like, you know, women vote more than men.
Yeah.
And of course you're right, but I didn't realize how right you were. Do you, off the top of your head, know how many more women than men voted in the 2020 election?
I think it's like 55-45.
It was 10 million more women voted than men.
Okay, well, you gave a hard number. I gave a percentage.
Well,
I don't know.
More than 10%, though. Well, no, it is.
Yeah, it was like 82 million and 200,000 to 75.5 or something like 72.5.
There's just more of us.
10 million more. I mean, that is.
That's good.
That's not. Women have the percentage of voters who have voted for women has been higher in every election since 1980.
Right. But I'll also, and this is where, can I just say that the number that I am obsessed with is the non-college white women in these swing states and how they break. Because for me, that's a Dobbs, J.D. Vance, yep, misogyny kind of thing. And in the crosstab, that's the crosstab number I look at a lot. And Kamala Harris is right now overperforming with those non-college white women relative to Biden, which is the big, that is where, to the extent that I'm being forced to give predictions right now, and I try to defend my feeling that she's going to win, it is those numbers, because you can offset a lot of slide with young black men and Hispanic men and young men in general, with sort of like 55-year-old working class white women, because there's just more of them as a percentage.
Yeah, no, that's exactly true.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one-coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save.
Rebate in form of Visa gift card equal to 100% off the second eligible item purchased before or after applicable discounts, if any. See details. Offer ends 7/9.
Let me just float this. On election night, we will be doing a Bulwark live stream to help all of our friends get through this. And we're going to do one that's just for everybody, for the people, that's going to be open. But what if we did a subscriber only, a members only feed, which is just me on gummies all night long? And I just do it solo. I'm just me in front of a camera.
I couldn't be more supportive of you doing that, JVL. Unfortunately, I'm on MSNBC from 2 till 6 a.m. on election night, so I think I'm going to have to be sober.
Do they hate you? Why would you get that? That is a horrible
time. I think they
hate
me. Yeah, I think they hate me. Yeah, I do.
Jesus, what a punishment.
You know who else hates Tim? But in a weird,
Anita
parasocial
Dunn?
Way? Steve Bannon.
Oh.
So, Timmy, you went to see Steve Bannon yesterday, and he looks a lot like John Voight's character in the movie Heat at this point. The hair is really flowing and stringy now. It's kind of the waves and curl is gone. Not a lot of body to it. He looks like he lost a lot of weight while he was in Danbury.
Yeah, I think that was maybe misleading. I think he might have just lost a lot of weight around his jowls underneath the podium. Still looking a little thick.
Really? Okay. From the sides, I thought, oh, maybe Stevie, maybe, you know, the cafeteria food up there was. Anyway, he was bantering with you, and you know, looked like he was just happy to get down in the back and forth of politics again, and you know, get ready for the next insurrection. What thoughts would you like to share with us?
Yeah. Hate is maybe not the right word. I'm very much a frenemy for him. He sort of needs a foil, I think. Frenemy. Yeah. He likes to be argued with. You can almost sense it. Like this room, as weird as Bannon looks with the pirate hair and the face splotches and like the 18 shirts, like he's kind of like the most normal person in the room, honestly. Like besides like a handful of other straight reporters that are there, like Vaughn Hilliard is there and a couple other reporters, but like the people that he surrounds himself with, like can't even look at me in the eye. Like they're so uncomfortable, and then they have all of the reporters from like Real America's Voice there, and so it's like after my question, and then Vaughn asked some good follow ups about whether he's talked to Trump. He has shocking that Donald Trump is on the day of an
Sloppy
ex-cons,
Steve. I thought Trump
relief.
Barely even knew his name.
Yeah, he's talking. He called Sloppy Steve on the black car ride from Danbury down to Manhattan. Apparently, but and watched the War Room according to Steve, but. The other questioners are like, hey, Steve, it's Harry from Real America's Voice. And I just, can you feel the momentum in New York? We're going to win in New York, aren't we, Steve? And it's like, you know, hey, Steve, it's Natasha from patriotnews.org. And it's just like, oh, what do you think about the great patriots? And like, you can kind of sense him getting annoyed by these people, like wanting to be like, I want to fight with Miller again about my crimes. So, you know, like the Steve of it, I don't know, is that interesting? I wrote for the Morning Shots. The big takeaway is not surprising. Like he's not he's back, getting right back in the saddle. He still wants to do the kayfabe where he pretends to fight with the elites, but he's obsessed with them. Like he shouts out the Vanity Fair cover story on national populism in this press conference, and I'm like, how did you read that? Like. Is Vanity Fair going to the prison library? Or was like your first, yeah, when your first thing when you got out
was locked up? Like it's a, you know, it's not like real prison.
They got Vanity Fair at Danbury, maybe, or maybe they just brought him a stack of his favorite upscale periodicals as soon as he got out of prison. I don't know, but so that part is like, but at the same time, he's practical. Like when he talks about the race, he kind of sounds like Pluff. You know, like he's like, it's very narrow, you know, like we need to win, like we need to break the blue wall. He can break the blue wall, but we assess it as a very close race and we can't lose focus, right? So he, for all of his horrible traits and criminality and the fact that when I said to him later in the press conference, the part that wasn't on video, I was like, you seem like a high risk for recidivism to me. and he basically just was like, yeah. Like, yes, we're going to do this again. We're taking on Pelosi again. We're doing the same thing again. So that part is ominous. The big main takeaways I have, like the real ominous parts are less Steve himself than like his message to his people, like the War Room listeners, is you need to be prepared to go to jail for your country. And like, taking it one level, that's just kind of like this fantasy, whatever, like craziness. That's like, okay, a little cheeky
fingers
bluster.
Crossed. Yeah, I hope cheeky, they're prepared to go to jail for their country.
Cheeky bluster on the one hand. On the other hand, I'm like, man, if 1% of the audience takes that a little too seriously, you know, like that could lead to some pretty ominous results. So that's the part that I like. The stochastic element of this is I think one of my big concerns. My other concern is the freaks around him. So it's like that guy Mike Davis, you know, who's been tweeting about how me and Mehdi Hasan are going to go into the women's gulag, and like,
hey,
Jeff Clark is there, listener to the Bulwark podcast apparently. Hey, Jeff Clark, I told him that I thought he should be in jail.
Future Attorney General Jeff Clark.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. And then he's got this posse of little people who are around him trying to tell me to stop asking questions, and the muscle comes over to sit next to me, and it's like. Steve's like, just shut up, like, you little fucking weirdos. But like, all of them, when they finally get the courage to talk to me afterwards, and I'm having their conversations with them, I mean, they're deep in the sauce, bro. Like, they're deep in the sauce. And like, they've convinced themselves, like Mike Davis, for example, has convinced himself that if Trump wins, Kamala's going to do what they did. Right? Like, and so they're rationalizing their own plans for nefarious actions by Kevin. They've all convinced themselves. Like, this was not shtick for me. Like, it was like I'd stayed around long enough, was like listening to them talk to each other and whatever. Like, they've convinced themselves that, like, the Kamala Nazi thing and whatever, like, that the deep state is really coming for them, and that they're going to try to block Mr. Trump's presidential win next time, and that they are going to act extrajudicially. And it's all pretty right. Every accusation is a confession. But like, to me, like, most of the alarming part of it was just like how perfunctory that was. Like that's just kind of how they talk, right? That's just kind of how they talk. And the off camera element to me was the part that was kind of raising the hair on my arm a little bit.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sarah, what do you think?
I mean, the main thing that jumps out to me is the way that Trump has always been like a mob boss. This is very like mob-esque, right? Like, you know, Bannon, like a good soldier. He did his time. He didn't sing to the feds, right? Yeah. He's telling all the other people, sending a message, right? That care about this cause. You care about the, I don't know, mob terms, capo, like whatever. You care about the boss, the godfather.
Family.
The family, right? You don't then this is what you do. You prepare yourself to go to prison for the family. And I really agree with Tim that, like, this is it's always where the Trump, the clown with the flamethrower kind of comes together, right? Where it is unserious and performative and Bannon knows what he's doing. But there are a bunch of guys. It's funny. We got a voicemail the other day at the office. And it was just, and we get lots of these, but it was somebody just saying the F word over and over again, but like would change the cadence. So they would just be like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. And I got all day. I got nothing to do, bro. So I'm just going to say all day. I'm going to fill up your inbox with me saying, and just went on and on. And I was like, you know.
Healthy.
Well, sure. But it's also a lot of people. He was very candid in the fact that he doesn't have anything better to do. And there's just a lot of these young men hopped up on video games and Bannon's war room who this is where, you know, if Trump loses, but it's close. These are the guys who come out of the woodwork. And like, so it is both stupid, but deeply disturbing.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I had one other analogy that I want to give you besides the mob thing. I guess it's related because there's an Eastern European mob. I meant to get to this with Vindman today on the Daily Pod, and we just didn't have time. It felt kind of like Eastern, like a Russian bloc press conference as well, you know, like that we were in Belarus. You know, it's like the man, like Lukashenko's man is out of prison and he's gathered with him like this like weird cadre of like security and bagmen. And like, you know, I'm just like, you're imagining, I don't know, who like Scooter Libby gets out of prison right during the Bush. I'm trying to think of like more up like traditional, like upscale, you know, kind of crimes in the past that have been created. It's like the people around, you know, it would have felt, and they're having a press conference, it would have felt like you'd have the lawyer and the press secretary and they'd have this coat on, and you know, it'd be very formal, and it's like we've you know, learned from our mistakes and we're going to move forward. And like this to me felt like Belarus, which I think is only an interesting insight because if Trump wins, like we might be on the path to Belarus, and I think that it kind of answers the question of, because I get a pretty at this point it's pretty minor, but I do get some feedback from people that are like, why do you give this attention? Why do you give this attention? It's like the freaks in that room are running the government next time, right? Like it would be one thing if it was like, you know, 2028. And Glenn Youngkin is the nominee running against Kamala, and Steve Bannon and a bunch of freaks are having a press conference about how they're going to overthrow the government. It's kind of like probably better just to not give them attention then in that space, you know. I think that in a lot of ways it's a important insight into where this thing is headed if things go the wrong way on Tuesday.
So that actually segues very nicely into Jeff Bezos and the Washington Post. So I've been kind of on fire on the Washington Post stuff.
And you really have.
Yeah. This is just one of those cases where I see everything much more clearly than other people do. And and I'm sorry, it's just the truth.
No, you've been right. You're right. I'm clouded by I was clouded in this situation. You're right, I was clouded. And here's why I was clouded. I've had a long time bugaboo that I don't think that newspapers should endorse in presidential elections, right? And so like and so you're the same. And so like, yeah. I allowed
There's a reason that, the Bulwark doesn't endorse candidates.
Right. I allowed that bugaboo to kind of cloud the clarity that you have had on this. So anyway,
but continue. I mean, at the very, very root, and it was a buddy of mine, Topher Harrison, who said this to me, and he's a Russia scholar, and he's like, this is what happens when the oligarchs believe that the rule of law can't protect them. And that's ultimately what this is about, right? So Jeff Bezos is not an idiot. He lives in the world. And he's been looking around and he has seen that the machinery of the law has refused to hold Donald Trump accountable. And our democracy has thus far refused to hold Donald Trump accountable. And so he's like, okay, so what am I supposed to do? Like, I'm out here on a line. And if the rule of law has failed, then I have to do what I need to do. And this is, you know, Bob Kagan had a great line on the show with you, Tim. He said, you know, capitalism depends on the rule of law. Capitalists do not.
That was good.
Right? That was so good. And And so that's exactly what this is, right? I mean, if you're Jeff Bezos, you're looking at guys like Steve Bannon coming out, like, ready to recidivate, or whatever the verb form of that is. And so you do what you do, right? And I don't know, Sarah, did you... I feel you and I haven't talked about this at all. I get the sense that you were kind of like blasé about the post thing. No,
I'm not blasé about it. I think that the
tell me what you think.
I think that the pre-surrender is really concerning. I think what I've got is I'm conflicted about the mechanism by which people are expressing their outrage, which is to cancel their post subscription, and I tend to be sort of like, ooh, I don't love the idea of all these journalists who've been doing some of the best investigative journalism in the country over the last, 8 years. They're the ones who are going to bear the brunt of it. And like 250,000 subscribers is, man, is that a lot of people.
10% overnight.
Overnight.
I mean, we understand. I would just say, if I could just, for listeners, just set the table a little bit. Like, we, Sarah and I and Tim, understand at a very deep level the idea of how churn works, the economics of the business and whatnot. And, you know, publications expect to either gain or lose subscribers who are, you know, in an ongoing relationship with the product at certain rates. To have 10% go away in 36 hours is catastrophic.
Yeah, sorry, although I will say, I mean, this is a Bezos decision, right, to not endorse and not endorse right now, which means I assume he offsets the loss in the short term. Like, he has more money than God. I do think I saw some commentary about, like, people telling on themselves when they canceled their Washington Post subscription and not their Prime subscriptions, which I thought was kind of a good point. But I do want to say, screw Jeff Bezos and all the other cowards who are pre-surrendering. Everybody who, and because when Tim says, like, they're on the line, no, he's not. Nobody has more protections in place than Jeff Bezos.
That was me who said that, not Tim.
Oh, sorry, JBL. Nobody has more protection than Jeff Bezos. Like, the idea that these people who are richer than God, who have personal wealth that is the GDP of a medium-sized country, like, I'm sorry, you think you can just, because, like, I have always also been, had, like, mixed feelings about the idea of a newspaper endorsing, but, like, the idea of, like, well, we've lost people's trust. I mean, to take a paper from Democracy Dies in Darkness, like, to we can't endorse because, oh, people don't trust us, is just, like, they give up the game. Like, don't lie to me. Don't act like I'm an idiot. We know exactly what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Right?
It's just pathetic. And I don't, like, if you think people are so dumb that they're going to believe that,
so
your
you
paper's failing too.
You don't buy Jeff Bezos' explanation, Sarah, that he wrote on Monday, where he said it was just about regaining, it was climbing up a tick on the trust scale. And this meeting with Blue Origin, it just came out of nowhere. He didn't know about it. Nobody talked with the Trump campaign. It's just suddenly the campaign called Blue Origin that Monday morning and they threw it together.
You know what I think about this story is that, like, if I let myself feel the full weight of this story, it's, like, too scary and depressing. Like, I just need Kamala Harris to win. Because every single one of these things that happens if Trump wins is a preview of the next level of capitulation that we're going to see. You know, going back just to one of your newsletters and also our friend Christian Vanderbrook's been out there re-upping all of these old things from all the anti-Trumpers or even the pro-Trumpers from 2016. And it's not just that they were opposed to Trump. It's that they were specifically opposed to Trump because he was a fascist or an authoritarian or behaved in ways that were extra-governmental or outside of his power or for reasons of conservatism, like he was going to burn down institutions, all that stuff. These folks who now all either sit on the fence or do sort of casual water carrying for him, or like Scott Jennings and some others are now sort of some of his biggest boosters. They sound exactly like us today. They did back then. And I just, the extent to which we, every election cycle has both been us sort of escaping narrowly from the worst outcome and has brought, you know, sort of a new phase of political realignment. It's also brought with it new capitulation every time. And this time to see the billionaires capitulating, right? And going from boosterism in the case of Elon to capitulation in the case of Bezos, or sort of sinking to the back like a Zuckerberg. It is, it's really scary. Like, there just aren't a lot of people willing to stand up anymore.
Yeah, my path to Bernieism just gets one tick over every episode of The Next Level, because I did, I guess I was doing Nicole's show on Monday, and I had missed that Warren Buffett also didn't endorse this time. Mm-hmm. And it's one of these things where it's like, kind of who cares with Warren Buffett on the one hand. But like, on the other hand, just the accumulation of all this, right? That we went from a time in 2016 where it didn't work, right? But there were a lot of kind of extenuating circumstances for why it didn't work. But at an elite level, there was like a universal saying of no to him. And the intensity probably wasn't where it should have been. So, you know, there were a lot of things that explained why 2016 went the way it did. But to have backslid from that and to now be in 2024 after the attempted insurrection, after January 6th, for them to have weakened their opposition to him substantially. I weakened it is even the wrong word. To have moved from opposition to neutrality across the board. Jamie Dimon, Buffett, Bezos, Zuck, Google, apparently Sundar and Donald are talking. I mean, it is outrageous. And, you know, when Sarah says the weight of all thinking about it makes her feel too scary for her, like, the weight of all of it for me, like, makes me just want to be for Bernie. It's just like, actually, I think that maybe we can bring some balance to this situation if we really were planning on doing the tax on unrealized gains. I think maybe for everybody over 1 billion, I think maybe Kamala, we were just joking about that tax on unrealized gains, or that was just some Elizabeth Warren people talking, weren't really going to do it. But after seeing how the billionaires behave this time, I think maybe a tax on unrealized gains for billionaires is what we should do.
So the Bernie thing notwithstanding, the thing is, though, is that just, I'm not going to launch into a whole defense of capitalism, but like, the reason that they're doing this is because Donald Trump operates in transactional crony capitalism ways. That's it.
Right.
And so in a normal thing, and the reason they're doing it with him and not with Kamala is because nobody thinks Kamala is going to be retributive toward them. Right. And like,
well, that's a thing we can fix.
Yeah. Maybe they need a little high heat.
No, I know.
But the very fact that they're doing it is in itself the argument about why Trump is so dangerous, not just because they can't be there as bulwarks, so to speak, against him, the richest people in our country, to whom this country has given him so much. But it's that Trump's transactionalism and sort of low level menace towards these companies has created an anti-capitalist environment, but a much more like a Russian environment of patronage.
So what makes me feel a little ashamed of myself here is that I should have realized like 5 or 6 years ago that this is necessarily where we would head. And I didn't. I thought like, well, you know, the elites will stand up because the elites, it's in their best interest because they need a stable order in order to continue making money, right? I just thought like their self-interest aligned with this. And actually history is, as Bill and Bob talked about with you the other day, Tim, this is what happens in every time a fascist movement takes hold within a democracy. The business elites always make their peace with the fascists, because that's the only way they can preserve their position in the short and medium term. Like, maybe in the long term, like, they really need stability, but in the short and medium term, that's not what they need. They just need room to continue operating. And they always do this. And I didn't quite realize that. This is inevitable. And what that really speaks to is a failure of the Biden administration to not go after Trump and Trumpism hammer and tongs from day one. And this is a thing I think we've all had like different opinions at different times in the course of the last 4 years. Like Charlie was always really like, you know, what is Merrick Garland doing? Why isn't he going harder at these guys? I was more of a, no, I like this. We should try to, you know, let the fire die down and, you know, maybe peace will break out and stuff. The answer is that when the good guys control government, they need to pursue accountability to the maximum possible extent. And if you don't do that, that's what creates room for the elite classes, especially in business, to say, oh, well, you know, I have to just go and throw in with the strong man. I don't know. Is that too deep a thought? You guys don't like that.
I think with the benefit of hindsight, I was always, as is my wont, usually pulled and pushed between the you and Charlie point of view on that. Like, I wanted Merrick Garland to do more, but I also kind of wanted comedy but with the benefit of hindsight, I don't really know that would have mattered.
Maybe that's true. Yeah. Maybe none of it matters. Sarah, do you have thoughts? I forget where you were on the question of, I think you, I mean, we all went back and forth on this, right? And
yeah,
ultimately none of us had anything to do with it because the AG is independent and the AG makes his own decisions. But
yeah, I mean, I think for me, I lean towards comedy moving on a little bit if you think Trump's gonna, you know, exit the stage. I do think though, I shifted a little bit during the January 6th committee where once they presented all the evidence, there was part of me that was like, wait a minute, you've got all these people? And it you know, I think that sometimes for us to make these judgments can be a little hard because we don't know what they have or what, but like the second that the Cheney January 6th committee produced all of this evidence that they were sitting on, all this testimony from Republicans, from people who were with him, and you were like, how is it possible they haven't moved on this? Because it was so much more than just the speech, right? So I feel like I just think the way when Tim says it doesn't matter, having sort of done this podcast with George, where we really thought we were going to get somewhere with these cases, and then to have the only one that moved be the Stormy Daniels election interference case, I've actually been really disappointed that the American people did not. I thought the American people, for the guy who's running again, for us to feel like our democracy is functioning correctly, they should have seen litigated and put in front of a jury the question of January 6th and trying to overturn the election and the illegal acts that were in there too. So things like calling Brad Raffensperger and looking for 11,000 votes. But also, before you give this guy access to nuclear secrets again, we should know about the fact about how he so grossly not just mishandled the classified documents, but refused to return them, treated them as his own, shared them with people in ways he wasn't supposed to. Like if there was a January 6th committee about the documents, I'm sure we would find tons and tons of things, right? Like specific documents that wound up in the hands of people that they shouldn't, or that were very sensitive and they were just sitting around a bathroom. And it feels like our system of justice should have allowed the American people to have that in front of them before this election again.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is another case where, again, I think in hindsight, it is now obvious to me, at least, that maximum accountability and maximum aggressiveness on pursuing accountability was the right thing. A lot of people thought that the Alvin Bragg case was like, you know, oh, it's the weakest of the three. And, you know, boy, it's the one that seems the most political. And it turns out, thank God we had the Alvin Bragg case. Because
why?
If we hadn't,
no, because, see, I
he
don't
wouldn't have been
way.
Convicted of anything.
Yeah, but, like, who does it matter at all that he was convicted in that case?
I mean, I think so. I think that he would be in a stronger position right now with no convictions. I think it would be harder to pry those, you know, the marginal Trump voters, I think, would be less marginal absent his 34 felony convictions.
I'm not sure. In terms of the people who are out on Trump, you don't get that many people. Don't get that many people talking about his felony convictions. I just think that case was not the weakest case, but just the least relevant to the American people from a decision-making standpoint.
Yeah, I agree, but also it turns out to have been important because without it, we wouldn't have gotten anything. And if you remember, the case was really strong. Like, you know, we all watched the case, we all listened to the witnesses. Like, he had the goods, and it was good that he pursued maximum accountability. And if, God help us, if Kamala Harris wins, I hope that she pursues maximum accountability across the full
So you
spectrum.
Don't think she should pardon him? Because I remember a whole piece you wrote
yeah.
about
no,
how
I
Biden
no longer,
should pardon.
Yep. No. I no longer believe that. I now believe that would be a catastrophic decision.
Well, I'll tell you, I was with George at a live event at one point, and I suggested the potential in the service of national comedy, the Harris pardoning him, and I almost got Mike Pence'd in the room. Like, yeah. I almost got
tomatoes.
Run out.
Ladies are taking tomatoes out of their purse.
Boo! Yeah.
No, I've changed my mind very hard on the pardon.
Can I give you two? Can I give you two pieces of breaking happy news before we leave?
Sure.
Or did we have another? Do we have another topic?
No. That's all I got.
Arnold has come out of the woodwork to endorse Kamala Harris.
Arnold,
that's good. And just now, new CNN polls out of the Blue Wall. The last CNN polls from the Blue Wall. Are you ready?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Michigan, Kamala Harris, 48. Donald Trump, 43. Wisconsin, Kamala Harris, 51. Donald Trump, 45. Pennsylvania, Kamala Harris, 48. Donald Trump, 48.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. That's good.
Tied in Pennsylvania?
Tied in Pennsylvania is not good, but hey. Going to bat, as I've said on every podcast, and JVL quoted me saying the other day, I don't like going to battle where Donald Trump has three outs. I will feel much better if Michigan and Wisconsin feel stable and we're fighting for Pennsylvania. That's better odds for Kamala Harris. So that is that's a winner.
Do they
for
only
me.
Have blue wall states? Do they have Nevada in
Just
there?
Just blue wall. Where are you? The only thing that makes me a little disappointed about this is, at some level, if Pennsylvania and Michigan were the ones that were looking good, Wisconsin leaves Kamala with another out of North Carolina. I feel like North Carolina could be winnable for her.
Maybe. And, I think North Carolina is really tough to pin down now.
Yeah.
Ever since the storm, like, I think a lot of people left. I think people have feelings that are incredibly localized, both around Mark Robinson, but also around how FEMA and, you know, they got both flooded and then flooded with disinformation. Like, who knows what that's done to people? Has it made them more likely, less likely? I couldn't possibly say.
All right, final temperature check. Final temperature check here for the three of us since this is the last next level.
I thought we were
the
doing
election.
These nighttime
oh,
things. Or
oh,
something.
We are. Okay. Well, maybe. I didn't realize that was decided, so we won't do a final temperature check.
No, we can't. I mean, we can.
Good
I think
show.
We can do a broad one.
Okay. Go have a. It's been a very long show, but if you would like to do it, you can do it.
I think that, and I've said for a long time that I think it's really important which way the independents break at the end. I see a lot of people constantly arguing, who is undecided? How could anybody be undecided at this point? But the fact is, I can't remember if we were all talking about this at some point, but, you know, at the end of Hillary Clinton's campaign, she got the Comey stuff. She had that flu. I think, you know, Biden had independent. And so independents broke for Trump in 2016. In 2020, they broke towards Biden. I think because of COVID and because of, you know, people were just sort of done with Trump. And I think the question now, right, is like, which one is the incumbent? Like, the independents have broken away from the incumbent both times. Or I think Hillary Clinton was like a third Obama term to the extent. So, and this time it's like, well, who is the incumbent? Which way are independents going to break? And I just think that going back to the top of the show, Trump's closing argument, he stepped on his message, got messed up. 450,000 Puerto Ricans in Pennsylvania, bad bunny. Like, he's just, he's had a lousy last week. She's had a stronger last week. Biden would get out of her way. And so I believe independents are going to break for her at the end, including women.
Tim A.
My palms are literally sweaty. It's not an Eminem reference. My palms are actually sweating right now just talking
about
this.
Knees weak, arms are heavy.
Yeah. There you go, Sarah.
Sarah. Hey, well done.
B Rabbit. I fucked up. I'm about to fuck up again. When I was with Mallory McMorrow, I gave the incorrect name of where they have the rap battles. It was the Shelter, and I called it the Chapel.
Mm.
Which really, I felt like really was a neg against my 8 mile reference capabilities. Anyway, my view hasn't changed for a month, and I don't think it's going to change until next week. I think she has a narrow lead in those three states. I think she can win North Carolina. She can maybe win Nevada. I think there's an outside chance that I do think there's poll hurting. I think there's an outside chance that there could be a polling error of like 3 points. That I think it's probably more likely that it's in her direction than his, but it could certainly be in his direction. And I think we're gonna be sweating it out. I like the fact that Georgia has fixed the counting speed is super important, because I think we're gonna know a lot more on election night than I thought we would. So that's my temperature check is a little bit down on that. I think it's going to take a long time to count some of these other states, but you know, if she loses Georgia by one and she did really well in the suburbs, like that's bad to lose Georgia, but you can still start to feel pretty good that things are going to break the right direction in those other states. Actually, you know, we won't do the other alternative. So I think that I'm feeling a little bit better about that.
All right. It's been a good show.
What about
a long
you,
show. Maybe we will be
that's
right. I am the worst.
Weekend. Keep an eye for it on the weekend. Maybe you guys, it's a secret bonus, but I'm on a flight tomorrow night and I can maybe do it Friday, but
we'll talk about it.
JBL and I are going to do secret Friday.
Sarah and I will do a little check-in tonight. Maybe we'll do a little check-in. Maybe it'll just be like bedtime, after dark with Sarah and JBL. And we just, 20 minutes, 20,
stuff
quick
of my
20 minute
here.
Vibe check. Yeah. You and me both. Guys, good luck, America.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.